מרגיש קרוב לעוד אחד של הביקורים ברופא שיניים שלי. יש לי רומן עם הרופא שיניים. כל חודש אני צריך להיות שם. אבל אני מרגיש קצת דומה. So, you okay? You can hear me back there, all right? The talks on this retreat are going to be a series, which will develop throughout the retreat. And, the title of the retreat, you can really say, is Finding Ourselves and losing ourselves, and losing ourselves to live in a greater world. But this evening, I want to start with some basics, and really to discuss what sort of tools do we need for the journey? What's in the toolbox? Because one of the things about the self that's a little subtle is that it's transparent, that we don't see it, that we just act it. So we're acting ourselves constantly in life, and we don't see the self that we're acting. So it's like invisible. We just do it. We are it. So we need some good equipment and tools to be able to see this self. And that's what I want to talk about this evening. And I think basic truth of all of us is that we have in us a longing for release, a longing for freedom, a longing for change, a longing for things to be better. And because of this self that's so used to acting in certain ways, we automatically say, in order for me to live a better life, I need to change the circumstances I live in. It's automatic. It's the story of the self. The self says, if you want things to be better, go to a better place, do a better thing, find different conditions. So, we have definitions of what's better for us. And these definitions are usually material things. We think if we get more money, or if we get a better car, or better relationships, or a peaceful world, or better food, or people are nicer and kinder to us, then we'll be happier. And in a way, it's the self leading us all the time in this way, like leading us by the nose, saying, get better, live better, do things differently. I'm amazed to read recently that such a huge amount of effort is now being spent to put a human being on Mars. And I thought, well, there's lots of wonderful rocks on this planet. Why do you need to go to a rock out there on another planet with when it's really the same sort of material as we have right here? But it's this restlessness. It's bound to be better over there on Mars, somewhere else. And it's based on some fundamental discomfort that there's something a little bit wrong with the way we are now, and we're not able to be settled and deeply quiet and deeply aware in the way things are right now. We have this driven desire to make change, to get things better. And it's rather automatic. And in fact, most people would say, well, it's obvious. And most people would say, well, you Buddhists just want to stop me developing. Where's all my ambition if I have to sit in meditation all day? I need my ambition. I need change. I need to develop. I need to be better. Most people would say, would assume it. But there is a point that when we try and even if we succeed in getting things better for us, we actually soon realize that we take ourselves wherever we go. That whether we stand on Mars or on a rock in the Galil, it's still us standing there. Nobody really has changed anything. This sense of escape, this sense of needing to run away, is very fundamental. One of the great British authors said, you know why the British in the end ruled the world and conquered the empire? It was to escape from their neighbors. Is this switched on, by the way? A little closer to home, we have to be aware that this is also translated into a spiritual context. That when we look at our spiritual life, which is our inner life, a place that is, in a way, the most important place to us, we can't help bringing to that same place the same automatic reaction of the self that says, I want things to be better. And so we come into our spiritual life with quite loaded with expectations that things have to be better. And a retreat is a good place to realize this. We've left our ordinary life where we are constantly busy. And from this perspective, we might look and quite honestly say, what the hell am I doing 24 hours being so busy trying to get life right, trying to do it right? From the perspective of stopping in the retreat, we might well look out there and say, what am I doing with my life? It just seems to be so busy trying to get things changed. But we have to be aware that this also doesn't stop as soon as we enter a retreat. And we can often define a retreat as a place for wanting things to be better. I'm not good enough as I am. I'm not happy with myself as I am. I need a result from this retreat to be a better person, to be more happy, to be more something, to be extra Stephen. A super special Stephen will come out of this retreat. But in there is a very, very strong message, which is there's something wrong with the Stephen that came into the retreat. And we have to be aware of that, that we may be coming with this message because it's part of the self as well. These strong messages or narratives that says something is a bit wrong with the way I am right now. In the spiritual context, this can lead to a lot of measuring, a lot of beliefs of the way things should be, a lot of beliefs in spiritual truths and spiritual concepts. I mean, there's a huge one, for example, in the whole issue of rebirth. And sometimes it's taken as such an important aspect of spiritual life in the Buddhist world that it's almost a joke. And the Buddha himself wasn't very happy with this. Because it's another form of saying, well, things are not right as they are, so at least if I believe that things will be better next time around, then I get some relief. But the relief has to happen now, not next life. Now we need the relief. Now we need to feel that things are not a problem with this moment of my existence. It's interesting that one of the places that we often get a little bit stuck, and it's interesting for me personally because in this retreat and a lot of the teaching I'm doing is based on concepts. And Buddhist concepts are huge. The Buddhist library is vast. I have a book which is totally unreadable. You can hardly, and it's in English. It's this thick. And it's a book on emptiness. And you can't understand a word. And I have another book very similar. And it's hard going. It takes like a really, you know, an hour or two to really read each page. It's thick and dense. And it's on the Buddha nature. So there is, it's not that there's a problem with conceptual thinking, and we're going to use a lot of it in this retreat. Learning is really important. Using the conceptual mind is fine, but if we use it as a kind of escape from the sense that things are not all right where I am right now at this minute, but if I think nicer concepts, then somehow I'll find relief. Then there is a dependence on that spiritual life has moved into a place where it's no longer authentically spiritual. It's conceptual. And along came the Buddha at a time when the Eastern religious life that he was part of, the Brahministic life, was very, very full of a kind of the spiritual materialism, the escape. The Brahmins were like the priesthood, like the Kohanim, if you like, and like in India today, very similar, running a huge ritual life based on a very structured society, based on a lot of very strong beliefs. And there were wild sadhus then, as they are now, and I think the Buddha was one of them. But he came with a very kind of breaking the idols kind of view. And he said, and I can quote now the main text that we base our mindfulness practice on, the Satipatthana Sutta. He said, just sit down. Find a tree or an old abandoned building and sit down and put your attention here and let go some of the worry and concern and issues of your life. Can't let go of all of them, but you can let go of some of them. Put your attention right here and allow what it is that is really happening to you to be seen. And that's where he started. And he started it with the very first teaching. So instead of redesigning experience to try and improve our existence, the Buddha said, what is our experience really? I have a poem that's supposed to have come from Lao Tzu. I don't think it really did, because I haven't seen it in other texts, but it doesn't matter. It's supposedly from Lao Tzu, and it's a nice poem about this. It says, we always hope that someone else has the answer, that some other place will be better, that some other time it will all turn out okay. But this is it. No one else has the answer. No other place will be better. And it has already all turned out the way it is. At the center of your being, you have the answer. You know who you are. And you know what you want. There's no need to run outside to see better, nor to peer out from a window. Rather, stay at the center of your being, for the more you leave it, the less you learn. Search your heart and see. The way to do is to be. We are helped by a movement, which is a movement that we took in coming into this retreat. And the movement is called seclusion. To wrap ourselves, to withdraw a little bit from the craziness of the automatic pilot of our life. Viveka, it's called, seclusion. To a little bit take a step out, reduce the input, reduce the stimulation, leave our mobile phone somewhere else, not talk, kind of settle down, quieten down a bit, equivalent to the Buddha's instruction to sit down under a tree and put your attention here and leave off the worries of the world. And so it is in a way changing conditions, I agree. But nevertheless, it's a small change in the direction of being independent of conditions. We reduce our roles, we reduce our automatic behaviors, we reduce the reminders that we have all day about worries, about threats, about problems, about what will be and what we have to do and what we have to concern ourselves with. The seclusion of the body, kaya viveka, kaya is body, viveka is seclusion, is withdrawal of the body into a place where we can sit down under the tree or sit down in indoor in the retreat. And it goes with citta viveka, means a little bit quietening the mind, seclusion of the mind, seclusion of the body, seclusion of the mind, quietening, settling down the body, settling down the mind. And that's a help that we do, that we need. And when we do that, we have a possibility to see things more clearly, to be surprised by what's really happening to us in this moment. What we really know, what is not on automatic, what we really know right now, can be very, very simple. Do I really know what it feels like to sit now on this cushion in this minute? And has this experience ever been before? A completely new experience of this moment, sitting here as I am on this cushion. William Blake said, if you clean the doors of perception, then everything will appear as it is, namely infinite. So the Buddha said, and the practice is, open the senses. Clean the ears, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, and the mind. Clean them of all the constant busyness with change and with doing. Use the senses to see the way we are right now as we really are. When we do that, the self becomes less transparent. We begin to see there is a self that's running the show. For that, we need to clean, as I say, clean the senses to see the way we are right now. And we will see the self in all its glory and confusion and needs and stories and issues and games. The toolbox for this, the Buddha loved to list qualities, powers, tools, understandings, and wisdoms. But the toolbox he defined in five different tools, and I think they're a real help, because all our practice, and you can imagine how much instructions you've had in your past from all the books you've read and all the retreats you've been on and all the meditations you've done. But all the practices that you can, that basically we've been talking about, and in the Dharma is talked about, they really come under five headings. And this is called the five powers. And I think that if you look at almost anything that is being said as guidance and is being practiced, it will come under one of these five, in one of these five powers. So I think that they're really, and they're called powers, because they're exactly the tools that help us to see the way we really are. They are powers. They're not beliefs. And that's really the strength of the Dharma, that it's about tools and not about beliefs or concepts. And the five powers, I'll just go through them. And you'll find, and if you have them at the back of your mind, you'll find that a lot of the things will fit into, kind of slot into those five categories of tools. The first is trust. Trust and confidence. And we already mentioned it this evening in some way. Feel the kindness. We're now in a different territory. We're in a vessel where we are kind, we are supportive. You've just been given food by volunteers who are serving with love. We are aware of each other and supporting each other here. Nobody's trying to take anything from anybody. There is the five precepts. So there's an atmosphere of trust. And we need that trust to cancel the sense of insecurity, of fear, of concern, and of worry that we might bring into this hall. The trust is a sense of okayness that we have in us. It's a sense that I can be with what is coming up in my body and mind. That I can trust myself and I can trust what's happening to me. And it's a good kind of basis for safety and for a refuge, for being at home with our experience. You will not be encouraged here in any of the guidance on meditation. You will not be encouraged to increase the amount of fighting you do inside yourself. Nobody's going to say, fight more, struggle more. Life is a battleground. Keep fighting. You will be encouraged to be soft and allowing and receiving things as they are, to allow things to be as they are, to end the battle, to end the struggle, to end the fight. There is a certain quality of trust which is like, instead of racing and rushing after the butterfly, as the image goes, we are actually quiet and allowing the butterfly to land on our hand. It's a sense of allowing things to be what they are. And that's trust, and it's a great support in a retreat. And it's a support that comes from the framework of the retreat and support inside us. That we now allow ourselves to be as we are, and we are okay as we are. We do not need to develop a theory that I'm wrong. I'm something wrong with me. I'm no good. I have to fix something. We can let go. It's not so easy, by the way. But we can let go of that story that I need to be fixed or something needs to be fixed. The second of the five powers is mindfulness, of course. And the trust helps us to be aware. The trust helps us to allow things to be what they are. When we allow things to be what they are, we can see them more clearly. We allow them to express themselves. We allow the pain in the body if it's there. And we allow the pleasure in the body if it's there. We allow the thought that's difficult. And we allow the thought that's full of joy and pleasure. We allow our body to talk to us. We allow the breath to be as it wants. We allow ourselves to feel just as we are. If we are bored, we allow the boredom. Which reminds me in brackets that today I had, being Passover Pesach, a load of grandchildren in my house. Like it was full, packed with grandchildren. And each of them have their narrative. They may be very small, but they already have their selves with their story. And one of the grandchildren, at least every 45 minutes, says, "I'm bored." Michelle Menley. And it's really interesting to see how their mothers, mainly my daughters, each one and each adult has a different relationship to what to do with this child when they say, "I'm bored." One would say, "Oh, okay, I'll get you a toy," and rush off and get another game. Another one would say, "Nothing I can do, leave me alone." I'm the Buddhist, so my reaction is, "That's interesting." Boredom is an experience. And the little kid looks at me. And but something does land there. Mindfulness is non-judgmental. One of its beautiful qualities is that we do not judge anything that comes up. Mindfulness is the free application of a clear mind to what is really happening. Mindfulness is also not an intellectual or a conceptual process. It's a close and intimate meeting with our genuine direct experience in the present moment. It's something very direct. Doesn't need any agency, it doesn't need any IQ, it doesn't need to be 12 years in university, it doesn't need any of that. It needs an intimacy with what really is happening, without judgment, without selection. We allow the beauty of the rose and the thorns that are there under the flower. We allow them both. The thorn hurts, the beauty is joyful. They're both part of our experience. And mindfulness is, its power is that we begin to see our life more as a phenomena and not as an ownership, an owned kind of story. We begin to see things as phenomena. As things that happen by themselves, as things that arise and go by themselves. And this is the freeing nature of mindfulness. And already in mindfulness, in the very first stages of mindfulness, we are able a little bit to reduce the control of me and mine. By this sense of non-judgmental, just allowing things to be what they are already reduces the power of the constant me, me, me. And we'll talk a lot more about that. The third tool in the toolbox is energy or persistence. It's basically about staying with what is happening. It's our ability to hang in there. It's like, it's very similar to watching football on TV. All you have to do is watch the ball. That's all. Just stay there and watch the ball. It doesn't need a huge amount of effort. He doesn't need to be a hero. You just stay there and watch the ball, but keep watching. So energy is not struggle and friction and being a hero. Or as Osho said once, why do you need to be a hero when you can be a zero? It's just being there with what's happening, but staying with it. And that's the quality of energy we're looking for. It's keeping our eye on the ball, keeping ourselves with what's happening as much as we can, without struggle or fight or being a hero or being disappointed if we lose it or giving ourselves a hard time if we don't feel concentrated or taking concentration as a super quality that we need. Concentration is the fourth of the tools. It's called concentration, samadhi, but there's many ways that we can interpret this word. And for our purposes, I think it's more realistic and sensible to regard samadhi, the fourth tool, as a quality of settling down, as our ability to settle, to like be like one of my chickens. I have chickens. And it's wonderful to see the way they sit on the eggs. And they look at you with their eyes as they sit on the eggs. They look at you. They're fully there, but something is just settled, so settled. So we just settle down and sit on our eggs. And we feel solid, we feel settled, we feel quiet, we feel in balance. And that's a better model than concentration as a word, because we all have enough concentration to do the job. The fact that we're all sitting here for half an hour, 35 minutes before, we all have enough concentration. So settling down actually, of course, helps concentration. Concentration helps settling down, but we don't need to put concentration, which is a very much a quality of excluding, of censorship, of I must be on this thing. We can actually have a bigger view of samadhi. It's staying with our experience. And the final tool in the five spiritual powers is wisdom. And wisdom is really what happens when we actually see things fresh and new in the present moment. When we clean the doors of perception, what do we see? We see things as they are. What is it that we see? Well, how are things as they are? How are things as they really are? How are things as they really, really, really are? And slowly, the wisdom will help us see that there's an awful lot going on that really isn't absolutely true. That we've been, in a way, holding on to lots of illusions. And one of the big illusions is I'm in control, is the me in the center of things. And there's nothing wrong with that, except that the me in the center of things is like this. That all the time we only see ourselves, what we need, what we want, what we like, what we don't, what we run away from, what we want to change, what we feel we need, who we are, what we expect. It covers us. And the wisdom, when we clean the doors of perception, begins to show us that we're living in a world of intimate relationship, which is far bigger than the me at the center. We feel ourselves part of a web of relationship, and at every moment we feel that relationship with a much wider world. And we begin to realize that all we really need to do is uncover is to a little bit open the cover, to make more space. And as we see more and more, we see there's more space. There's more ability to feel our essential nature as free, which is covered over all the time by the self and by the constructions we make around in the world and by our definitions and conclusions and needs and interests. And so in some way or other, the wisdom doesn't say to us we have to, is something we have to obtain and run after and achieve. And we don't need to read great fat books on emptiness for this. It's a much more a process of uncovering what in the first place we really don't need. It's like Rumi said, how do you dig a well? You throw away everything that's not water. We need to just see how much we can actually let go of, we throw away, we uncover. And then the inner space, the inner freedom can just express itself by itself. It's not something that we need to hunt for. We just need to allow it to shine. It is us. Thank you.